A Museum for Our Times. The WA Museum Director Alec Coles looking forward to the opening in November. And one of the first spectacular exhibitions is of sponges, creatures thousands of years old, some carrying swords. Many of them live just off the coast of Perth in a deep sea version of the Grand Canyon. Here's research scientist Jane Fromont.
Ah, it's the same length as the Grand Canyon in the USA, but it's deeper. The Perth Canyon, which is 20 kilometres west of Rottnest, so right in the front yard of Perth, starts at about 150 metres deep and goes down to 4,000 metres deep at down onto the abyssal plain.
4 kilometres, that's a huge distance. How do you get down there?
Well, we don't, actually. The 2015 field trip that we went on brought the research vessel Fulcor here, which is a deep-sea specialist research vessel, and that vessel has remotely operated vehicles. So you deploy the vehicle down to the seabed. It's driven by the technicians on the vessel. They can see what's happening in real time, and they drive it around the canyon, and when they see a beautiful specimen that we need to collect, that ROV delicately picks it up and brings it back to the
seabed. And you say, hey, there's one of those to the left a bit, grab it.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're directing things there, right?
Yeah, you can, yes, and you can direct what's collected.
And what do you get, sponges?
Yes, I'm a specialist on sponges, so I was very interested that we collected sponges. And when we got them all back to the laboratory at the museum, we found we had 11 species, and 5 of those species were brand new to science, so not known from anywhere else in the world.
With a completely different pressure down there, I mean, it's huge pressure, isn't it? Didn't they fall apart when they were brought up?
No, they didn't. They are just a multicellular animal, so there's no real tissue organisation to collapse down. Their skeleton is made of glass. They're filter feeders. They filter the seawater to get their food, but they also filter silicates out of the seawater. And then by using their cellular system, they convert that into silicon dioxide, which is the constituent of glass. So they make glass skeletons, hence their name, glass sponges. They're absolutely spectacular. They're often a lattice or scaffolding or ladders. So they're those sorts of shapes. And 80% of them is this glass skeleton and 20% is the cellular structure around them. So the glass doesn't collapse and the cells are just adherent to that skeleton, and we get them up onto the vessel in perfect condition.
Are they living?
They're alive.
They're alive. And so how do you look after them with a different pressure like that?
We sacrifice them for the purposes of science. So they are preserved and taken back for the museum collections. But what was fabulous about having the ROV down there and having the cameras down there is that you can see the population. So we're not collecting every individual in a population, we're taking one or two specimens so that we can find out what species they are. That all has to be done in the lab with microscope work. So we could never have figured out what species we had if we didn't take a specimen.
One wonders what they're doing down there, 4 kilometres down in the dark, just lying at the bottom of the ocean. I mean, what is life like, do you think?
Pretty stable, not a lot of currents. So you can imagine that these beautiful glass sponge skeletons are quite delicate and fragile. These glass sponges, the Hexactinellida, can't live in shallow water. They just collapse under there. They just get broken apart in currents. So they're down there happily living. Food drifting past in the current, they're busily filter feeding. They're incredibly efficient filter feeders, all sponges are. They can filter 99% of the bacteria that drifts past them on the current. So they're a wonderful asset for the oceans. Otherwise it would be like pea soup down there. But there's all these sessile animals that are filtering it out, laying it down, making bodies and animal bodies, and then other animals can shelter behind them, other animals live inside them. So it's a whole ecosystem.
And where do you normally get your sponges from if it's not such a spectacularly deep canyon?
Ah, well, there's a whole different group of sponges called the demo sponges, and they're in shallow waters. So any area outside of coral reefs or algal or seagrass beds, you'll find filter feeder gardens. This is where the sponges are, the shallow ones. So anywhere from about 10 metres, actually. So you can go scuba diving and see these animal gardens. And we're going to make them a feature, one of the exhibitions in the new museum in Perth. And that's because, aside from scuba divers, they're not really very well known, and yet they are a very critical habitat in the marine realm. And that's because they're part of the nutrient cycling system. They cycle nitrogen, phosphorus, carbon, all these global systems that are so important to the health of the ocean and the health of the globe. And very little is known about them. They're spectacular.
And is it dolphins or orcas who take them as presents to the spouse that they fancy?
Humpback dolphins in the tropical northwest. So it's the males. They've been found swimming around with sponges on their rostrums and apparently to attract a female.
What does the female find attractive about the sponge at the end of its nose?
We can't really have that conversation with the male dolphins, I'm afraid, or with the females for that matter. So we don't really know, but that certainly the males keep on doing it. There must be some success.
What made you choose sponges? Because I've got the idea of, without being disrespectful to the creatures, as I said, living at the bottom of deep seas or even in shallow waters, do they get up to much?
Oh, yeah, they get up to heaps. They're completely busy all the time because the way they get their food is by filtering the seawater. A fist-sized sponge, so if you just bunch your fist and think about that size, so it can filter its own body volume in 4 to 20 seconds. So in a 24-hour period, it can probably filter about 5,000 litres. They might be anchored to the bottom, but they're doing everything other animals do. They're eating, they're reproducing, have got a huge contribution to the environment. They're food for other animals. They're shelter, homes for other animals. They alter the current structure on the seabed so that animals can sit in the eddies behind them, little fishes and things, when they need a bit of a rest. That's a whole ecosystem. It's like forests on the land.
And did they really get sold, you know, as actual sponges you take into your old-fashioned bath?
Well, they used to, but they were depleted. There was a big industry in Europe and in the Caribbean, bath sponge industry, but it actually collapsed. Now, not so much so. They do farm them, but no, we don't really take them into our bathrooms anymore.
How many species do we have in Australia, roughly?
We have 9,000 species of demo sponges globally. We think there's at least 15,000, so we're running a bit behind in describing species. I'd hate to estimate how many are in Australia, but it would be right up there. It's got to be around 7,000. And that's partly featured in the new museum as well. We're putting species in there that are unique to Western Australia.
And there'll be a nice display there for people to look at.
Spectacular. Absolutely spectacular. It's going to be the best display in the museum, actually, in the new museum.
Spectacular sponges. Yes, the revelations keep coming. But what about those long swords? And how long did they live down there? The answers are almost unbelievable.
So the oldest one is 11,000 years old, they're estimating. And the species is Monorhaphus tunai. So Monorhaphus means single ray. So it's a glass sponge, but it tends to lay all its glass into one single spicule. So it lives in the deep sediment, in the muddy sediment, and it needs to anchor into that sediment. So this spicule's about 3 metres long. And it's just laid down layer upon layer of glass. And when they cut the spicule up to see if they could estimate the age, they saw growth rings like you see in a tree. And they estimated that that was 11,000 years old.
Does that mean that was the same sponge living quietly at the bottom of the sea for 11,000 years?
Yes, it does mean exactly that.
It could be the oldest thing on Earth.
Could be. except unfortunately it's been cut up in a lab now, but they'll be out there. We had some oil and gas workers contact us. They worked in the South China Sea, and they had an ROV down to do work there, and they would see these, like, it looked like bits of fishing rod sticking up out of the mud, and they, what is this? This is crazy, you know, it can't be fishing rod. And they were dotted around. They estimated they were about 5 metres apart. So they decided to pad the arms of their ROV and delicately remove a couple of these and bring them up to the surface. And they brought them to us at the Western Australian Museum to find out what they were. And they're spicules of Monorhaphus tunai. And our one, our longest one, is just under 2 metres. So we think it's about 5,000 years old. So,
oh, God.
Now, all through the ocean, we think. We haven't knocked off the whole population. Yeah.
I must say, I find that staggering. Sponges with 3-metre glass swords, living for thousands of years, just off the coast of WA. And another ship will be deployed to find more soon for Dr. Jane Fremont and the new museum in Perth.